Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And we're back for the second half of season six.
In the last 3 months, we purged all of our negativity about The Walking Dead, yeah?
I thought you were going to say purged all of our knowledge, and that would be accurate. No, we have not purged our negativity, I think. And in fact, there have been some things that have kind of just fostered it for me, honestly. Some developments in the real world.
All right, before we get started hardcore talking about this new half season, just want to talk about a schedule change or a format change, because Jim and I kind of agonized over our dissatisfaction with last season and our commitment to still kind of see this show through. And we thought one obvious problems is we're spending 5 hours of recorded information on this show per week, which is probably counterproductive. We are now going to change. We're ditching the instant cast. We're keeping the live watch, which is where club members can watch the show. We've got this audio-visual sync technology where you can sync up your local broadcast of The Walking Dead or your DVR watch of The Walking Dead with our live commentary and what's going on with the show and the commercials. And to make up for not having an instant cast, we're going to accelerate our full coverage and have the podcast that traditionally would come out on Tuesday afternoon come out on Monday afternoon. Yep. So we're advancing the entire clock a full business day or full podcast day, which means you've got to kind of hustle to get your feedback in on the show. But I imagine with this change, we'll be considering a lot of relevant feedback from last week on the current week.
Yeah,
we'll be more retroactive, which is a way the podcast kind of used to work anyway.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, we've done it for several reasons. We just weren't satisfied with last season and haven't been for a while now. Figured we were spending too much time on this. We've got a very full upcoming schedule.
This isn't a show that benefits from really deep delves and more watches and more recording. And
I found myself just repeating myself a lot between the instant cast and the regular
Which
one because of that.
Annoying, sure.
But the live watch is so much fun that we want to keep doing it. So
yeah. We'll see if we can be revitalized with this format.
Yeah.
I don't see, like you said when we were just talking about it, I don't see how they fuck up this first episode.
I can't imagine. Like
the setup,
the first
is...
episode of season six, the first half of it, was all action.
It
was
great.
Like, that's all you needed to do with that episode.
I mean, it didn't make a lot of sense, but it was super entertaining.
Right. And they're in the same situation this time. They've set up a scenario where you could see a lot of action popping off.
Sure.
And if that's what they do, it'll be good.
There's children in danger. There's babies
Always
in danger.
A favorite of mine, yep.
There's Maggie in danger.
Uh-huh.
Like, a lot of people that I actually give a shit about. They've got the horse shit with Carol and Morgan that's ongoing.
Right.
However that gets resolved.
But no time to deal with that in episode one, right?
Like,
that's not when you do it.
Sure.
So it seems like episode one is going to be action-packed. I am excited for that. Can't imagine they fuck it up. I've heard some stuff about like some slower, more individual focused episodes toward the end.
Where do you get slower? Because I heard the rumor about the individual episodes. Are you just saying that's usually when
they usually slow it down, get a little more emotional and stuff in those. But
okay, how many goats will be featured in this season?
At least three.
Three. You're tripling down on goats.
I am. Yeah.
All right.
I mean, you want it to get bigger and crazier, right?
What
the show as a
sure.
whole?
Sure, yeah. And two goats, that's what people are expecting.
Right.
You go right to three goats.
Give them more than they bargained for.
Right. It's like the classic Onion article about Schick reacting to Gillette having a four-bladed razor. It's like, fuck it, go right to six blades.
Yeah.
Okay, sure. We got to have three goats.
Mm-hmm. Lots of action. I mean, that's even, like, I know some stuff about where the comic goes in this first episode or in, you know, a lot of this upcoming stuff. I don't know how long they'll take to get there. But even without that, they've set up a scenario whereby a lot of action is waiting in the wings, I think.
Yeah, I'm just wondering.
Unless they drift through this cloud of walkers with no problem, which makes for a pretty stupid episode.
Well, this kind of dovetails into the death predictions. How shocked would you be if no one dies in this first episode?
Real shocked.
The one thing I could see taking away my enjoyment is I think that, especially with how last season went down, it's going to be a real easy argument to make that everything in this first episode should have been the climax of last season.
Okay. Yeah, I think we talked a little
immeasurably, bit about that. Immeasurably improved the pacing and some of the problems and some of the bitching that we had for last season.
Yeah.
Last half season, first half season.
Whatever. Yeah, for some reason, we like to rewrite the show. We like to go in and say,
well,
you know
so
what?
It's so easy. Right? It's so easy. It's like the Mad Libs of television drama. Yeah. You know, you just throw in your own adverbs and pronouns and you're good to go, you know? Sure. I think actually that's essentially what the Kirkman remix is. He just, you know, blank and blank went into blank and they moved very insists. Blankly. It's like the comics were one way and now, yeah.
He insists that when they write the scripts, they write it in Mad Libs form.
Sure.
So he can go in later.
Yeah.
And fill it all in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Depending on whose central casting sends as well.
Right. So death predictions, speaking of. And I mean, they're pretty much the same, right? Nothing.
Well, this
really
is one of the reasons
so
like I've become less enamored of the death predictions is because I feel like the death predictions I made at the beginning of season between seasons 4 and 5, I keep making them because I can't believe that they're going to keep dragging out getting to the quote unquote good stuff, the meat of this plot. Yeah. Like it's in my mind. They're getting to where they're at now, almost a year and a half too late. So. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess I'll say again that I think the Daryl and Glenn combination has a 100% chance of death. I don't know which of them, but one of them has to die this season, or I don't know how I'm going to stand it.
Okay. Where does that leave Maggie and Glenn?
Up shit creek. There is no Maggie and Glenn. There'll be Maggie.
What if Maggie dies? Then who do you predict on Daryl Glenn?
If Maggie dies, then I'm going to be like... Why make? I guess you make her pregnant. You make her pregnant because that, you know, just the same way you bring out Judith when you want to get people's hearts in their throat. It's right. Extra drama when you kill. Oh, you're killing for two now, Kirkman. Mm-hmm.
Would it be fitting if she had to if she survives long enough to have a
zombie baby?
A sustainable?
Is that what you're gonna go
for?
No.
Okay. A sustainable child inside of her, and someone has to cut it out. I don't know, Carl maybe.
Yeah, he's
has
the,
to cut it out.
He's the go-to for
and then kill her.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen.
No, I don't know. And again, how many babies can this show have? I would posit that there's one baby too many.
They need to do like the Muppets and just make a Walking Dead babies show. Just put one of them on a piano.
Yeah. Sure.
Stick them in a nursery.
Yeah. No, I could see Baby Eugene, Baby Rick.
Yeah.
All those people. Baby Carl would be like a zygote, wouldn't he?
Probably. Yeah.
You got him and Enid just chilling out in a test tube with Ron.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm not super interested in death predictions either. It's it used to be more fun,
right? Let's Rick and Carl 0. Yeah.
Yeah, still 0.
I'm at 0 with Maggie. You seem like you're a little bit higher.
Yeah, I think she could go.
Let's talk about Rick's love interest, Jesse. I'm thinking 100% chance this season, and not just because she's in the way of Michonne.
She is in the way. You're right, but not just because of that. Yeah, she's likely to die, I'd say. Carol, I don't think, is going to die. I think Carol's going to be around a bit longer. She's still got some stuff to work through.
Well, I'm going to give her 50% chance because, on the one hand, if I'm right and they kill a heavyweight like Glenn or Daryl... Then you got the same problem I talked about last year, which is you've only got 5 of the original crew that are well developed enough that they can kind of carry their own stories. Everybody else hasn't got there yet. So killing 2 of the original group seems excessive. You don't need that many. But on the other hand, as we argued last season, I don't know where Carol goes from here as a character. In fact, this shit she's doing with Morgan, I kind of see as a regression back to her... You know, prison arc where she kind of takes matters in her own hand and she acts unilaterally with that group approval, which I get is something Morgan's doing too, but I just find that whole thing annoying. So,
yeah, I feel like she might come back toward the middle. You know, she might be the one who can find the sustainable middle ground between who she's become, the Rambo like Carol, and Morgan.
Yeah.
I feel like she can maybe synthesize the ideas of everyone into a workable apocalyptic human being.
What? You have to have a dramatic moment to do that. What pushes her back to the middle? Because this thing with Morgan, if anything, is just radicalizing her.
Right. No, it is. I kind of got the vibe, like I was watching some of the previews, and you know how they do, like, cuts back to previous seasons and stuff. And they were showing, you know, Carol kind of dealing with the wolf situation. She's got this big W scrawled across her head, and she's like, oh, I don't know about this W thing. Like, I feel like maybe she's starting to acknowledge that she's gone a bit too far in the other direction.
Okay.
But I'm not certain of that. We'll see where they take that. But I think she's been one of my favorite characters throughout the whole thing, and I hope she doesn't die.
Okay. Who else are we leaving out here? I know. Let's do with the three latest kind of steady injuries. I guess, and that's been a couple seasons now. What I'm getting at is Abraham, Sasha,
Eugene, Tara, Rosita,
and Tara. I guess that's the five, the big five.
Yeah, those are kind of the new. Because
you've also got Heath from last season,
right?
You got the medical.
You got Aaron. You've got is it Patricia or Denise? I don't remember the doctor's
name. Right?
Something like that.
Patricia's rolled up with Heath, I think, but we don't really have a good beat on them yet.
Yeah.
All right, let's stick with Abraham. Let's stick with Abraham, Rosita, and Eugene. Any death ideas on that?
Eugene can go anytime. I mean, aside from his friendship with Tara, though.
I feel like they're trying to tell some arc with Eugene, and they're feels like they're in the middle of it, and I don't
and
know where
it's been okay. Like, I don't.
It's been very okay. I felt like
I don't mind their arc, like Tara and Eugene's arc together.
I was ready for him to step up last season at the finale of the mid-season.
You didn't like how he froze.
Nah.
Especially after he jumped in to help Tara.
And especially after Rosita took him to the side and did some one-on-one instruction, like, I feel that this is another thing where The Walking Dead is doing. It's just kind of character paralysis.
It is. It's like waffling.
We're trying to tell a story, but we always roll that back on the new episode. So Eugene can always be the eternal coward and the eternal man-child. Yeah. No growth. He can go through the motions of growth, but when the chips are down, revert back to type.
You got to grow. You got to grow or you die in this world. So maybe he won't make it. I think he'll get killed.
I think the writers have plans for him. Abraham, I'm worried because I feel like his happiness with Sasha paints a big target on his back. And much like Jesse's targeted on her back, number one, because she's saddled with Sam.
Yep.
who's got flashing red lights all over him. But also, Rick loves her. Rick cannot be happy for this show's format to succeed.
No.
So she's in deep shit. What do you think of that analysis?
Yeah, I feel like that's fair. So are you saying like Abraham or Sasha in that duo?
Abraham, but it would be honestly be more interesting for Sasha to go and see how Abraham deals with it. Can he stay strong? Can he stay off the sauce? You know,
right? Right now, honestly, Sasha feels like the stronger, like the more mentally fortified character. It's strange too because she went so far in the other direction.
But how? That's the thing. Like, that's a very recent development. Like, she's just coming off the almost getting everyone killed at the bridge fiasco.
Right. That's why I said right now. Like, as of the end of season 6A, I feel like Sasha's a little bit mentally tougher than Abraham.
Okay.
I don't know. He's screaming in Walker's faces. I'm not sure.
Fist bump, Tara. Tara and Denise.
Who, I like them.
I like Tara and Denise. That's that's the cutest. They're the new Maggie and Glenn.
Yeah.
There were some grumblings about them being a genuine couple and whether you know what their kiss meant and all that. But I
don't know that it matters.
I'm gonna ship it. I don't give a shit.
You're gonna ship it? Just go there, okay.
Therese. we need good names like Michonne and Rick. I want to suggest Rishone or Marik. Okay. Now I like Rishone.
Okay.
And I also like Therese.
I'm sure these names exist on the internet. I'm sure people have shipped them long before we've gotten there. But Therese is good, although it's a little close to Tyrese.
Ooh.
Not sure how I feel about that.
Hmm.
They could both suffer a pretty bad fate.
Sure. Well, that's anybody at any time.
It's true. What do you do with Abraham and Sasha? Abrasha.
Well, I'm counting on Abraham to die within the next few episodes.
Abraham.
I don't see that having legs.
Okay, so no need.
Okay. Mm. Yeah, so we both agree on the Denise Tara.
Yeah.
That's looking strong. How about Aaron?
Aaron and Daryl. I'm shipping them.
Okay.
Next season.
What's Aaron's boyfriend's name?
I don't know. He's going to be dead.
Really?
Daryl's going to take him out so he can move in on Aaron.
Oh, that's not something Daryl would do. Plus, I think we've established that Daryl's asexual. That's what we've decided.
Right.
I think Aaron, they still got story to tell with him. He's a cool character.
Definitely. Yeah.
He's one of the leaders.
And I do think it involves Daryl. The few leaders
Alexandria has.
Yeah. Like, I'm joking about the couple thing, but I do think it involves Daryl, his story.
Well, yeah.
They're kind of tied together at this point.
Yep. Who else are we leaving here? Enjoying that. Deanna's kid.
Spencer, he can die at a fire.
Spencer,
I don't care.
Can die. He can live.
I hope he
care.
Dies in a really stupid way. Like, about, not even walkers.
So Rick and Carl are solid. There's no way they're dying. How about Enid?
Oh, shit. She's back. That's right. It's a good journey.
Yeah. And there's something there between her and Carl. And there's that love triangle with Ron.
Yeah.
Speaking of Ron, what's your thoughts on him?
I feel like either Ron or Enid has to die.
Who are you? I'm hoping for Ron.
Of course. Ron's a little shit.
Yeah. And I actually like the chemistry that Enid and Rick, that Carl have. It feels very authentic, post-apocalyptic teenager.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something that The Walking Dead doesn't know how to nail.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. We'll see.
No pun intended.
I think that's about it for the cast. Yeah.
I know there
are some new people coming in, but I don't know if any of them are going to die right away.
Right on. What else do you want to talk about? Do you want to talk about this new shit that's come to light?
Yeah, let's talk about it.
So you and I were first sold on The Walking Dead as a serious interpretation of Kirkman's The Walking Dead series as brought to life by Frank Darabont.
Yeah.
Who has done lots and lots and lots of big budget, not necessarily big budget, but serious, mature adult work in the horror kind of Stephen King's less successful cousin. Stephen King, in the Stephen King universe, which has kind of supernatural horror and dread and a lot of this, the Darabont crew. He brought along, you know, Melissa McBride and all these people that I've forgotten.
Yeah, Andrea, Dale and Andrea. Dale. And sure.
He's brought all those along. And we liked season one. It was uneven, but it was definitely moving in the right direction. And season two, Darabont gets shit-canned and the wheels come off. And Walking Dead starts gelling into the gelatinous, jello-like product it is today.
Coagulating.
And we've always wondered what was going on. Did Darabont storm off? Was he forced out? What was his beefs? What were the gripes? And there are now details from the settlement. Because Darabont sued AMC over this deal.
With good reason, in my opinion.
Seems like it. What are the litany of things that you found? What are the things you thought most compelling or infuriating or interesting in the transcripts of this testimony?
Well, I think
I'll find a transcript and link it in the show notes too.
Yeah. It's interesting to read his deposition and some of the facts that have come out. But I think the most egregious thing to me was the kind of self-dealing aspect of the whole thing.
Yeah.
Where AMC, the distributor, I think, goes to Darabont, says, "Hey, develop this show for us."
Uh-huh.
He develops the show, he brings it to them, and they say, We're going to see how the show does with like a Lionsgate or somebody producing it, like actually making the show.
Yeah.
He does the formulation of the show, brings it to them, and they say, "Well, we're going to produce it in-house." Okay, fine. And they say, "We're going to see how the show does before we agree to any of like your percentages and stuff that you'll get from this." And so they make the show themselves. And then they do a license deal, like this sweetheart self-dealing bullshit with AMC, the distributor, where they license it to them for an egregiously low number. Some number like $1.4 million an episode, which is less than half of what it costs to make these freaking things.
Uh-huh.
So that there is, and it's a perpetual deal. It's in perpetuity.
You got a lot more of these details of this stuff down than I do. Holy cow.
with like the entire run of the series. So he's basically stuck never making a dollar off this, even though he owns like 10%, because they're never going to record a profit.
Okay.
So he's suing them over that, which I think is the most egregious thing. And this is not the first time that this self-dealing stuff has come up.
Right.
Like, there are a lot of other shows, like X-Files and
sure.
a bunch of stuff, which have had lawsuits or are suing currently. So kind of a thing right now, these self-dealing, vertically integrated companies.
Well, I thought it was interesting that in season one, when season two, there's a lot of interviews with Kirkman and Darabont where they're like, you know, wow, we're really excited to see what you do in season two with the expanded budget, because no one knew this was going to be the hit, and it was
right,
a hit.
Right.
When you find out that they actually cut the episode, like the budget went from like $3.2 million per episode to $2.6 million. And AMC said that the 30% discount you get from the state of Georgia for filming there, we're also keeping that.
Yeah. So essentially like a 25% budget cut across the board for season two, when he assumed, given the success of the show,
sure,
which was just enormous, that he'd be getting a budget bump.
Yeah.
And then he talks about like the conditions that the actors are acting in and these 100-plus degree Georgia heat, Georgia summers.
Well, that's the other thing, that like AMC stipulated that no more than 50% of the scenes can be shot outdoors, which explains why so much of the action was set in and around the damn farm and the farmhouse, and why they were kind of stuck there. Because, you know, we've said it many times that The Walking Dead seems to function best. Your mileage may vary, but when they're on the move, it seems like it's more realistic. Like, it's fine. It's fun to hunker down in a fortified location like the farm or the prison for an arc. But they need to be moving on until they get to some place. Like, Alexander might be the first place where you can actually plausibly settle down and tell a story there. But AMC essentially puts in the contract that you can't do that. That you have to, as another cost-saving measure, you have to guarantee that 50% of the scenes are set indoors.
Yeah, and then they, like, it just becomes apparent to me, based on the testimony here, that they are incredibly greedy. And not wanting to put money back into the show. They just want to pocket it.
Did you see that one of, like, the day after AMC? Because there's a lot of the stuff that I guess was buried at the time, but one of Darabont's assistant executive producers said that literally the day before he got fired, they were talking about how, like, man, this is a hard show to shoot, and now they've reduced their budget by, like, a third, and they're pocketing the tax discount. But Darabont was like, but I got to do it. I got to see this through, because I brought all of my people,
right?
Like all these people behind the scenes and above the line, and I talked them into doing it this way, and they sacrificed, like they signed contracts that they never would have, because I'm stuck here. I got to make sure I take care of my people. Then he gets tossed out. And you start, you know, reading, discuss, you know, about why, you know, why Dale wanted, you know, the guy played Dale. What's his name? Jeffrey?
DeMunn. Yeah.
All these guys, these, you know, Jeffrey DeMunns of the world, the Andrew Lincolns of the world, the John Barenthals of the world, they all signed up just to make this thing with Frank Darabont, and then he gets tossed off, and then you saw this mass exodus of talent.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's one thing to write characters out of the show for plot reasons. It's another to be forced out because you got unhappy people that want out of their contracts. And I feel like that, you know, how much of The Walking Dead, you know, how much of these remixes happened to accommodate that stuff?
Yeah, it really feels like this show has been shaped by the money.
Yeah.
Less so than by the creative talent behind it.
Which is something we always suspected, but to an extent that was greater than I could have anticipated.
Yeah.
Like, it's very clear that AMC, the executive side of AMC, does not give a shit about making this show good.
Yeah. It's all about how much money can they make from it.
And what's going to be interesting, because for the first time, The Walking Dead started to bleed audience last year. Mm-hmm. I wonder whether, if that trend continues, that the execs will either loosen up the pocketbook, or they'll even go into more like, oh, we really got to tighten our belts because we got to pump this cash cow for every last move.
Right. Will they ride it into the ground?
I don't know. But, you know, because again, The Walking Dead could be a story that's told for 20 years if they wanted it.
Right. I just don't know if the audience will be there for 20 years.
Well, I mean,
I can't imagine.
you could. I mean, there's shows that survive that long, like The Simpsons right now.
Yeah, I guess.
But it's.
Do you know anybody who watches The Simpsons?
I mean, people still do.
I know, but do you know, like,
no,
anecdotally,
I don't know
anybody who still watches it. I don't know how it's still on the air.
I don't
honestly.
Know. Like, I haven't watched it in like 4 or 5 years, but like, I've, right. you know, I hear people that every once in a while check in, like, you know what, it's still pretty good, but
I
don't know. But I feel like there's nothing precluding a well-run, well-executed show from running that long.
Hmm.
And it would be kind of interesting to do a long-term concept like that, but
yeah, you'd have to have Richard.
I think it's what's
Linklater.
More likely is they're going to run into the ground and really burn people off with this Fear of the Walking Dead, which is, in my opinion, a substandard product of a substandard product.
Yeah,
and it's going to be I don't know, but they could also turn around this season because they said so many times, like, you know, I saw the, you know, you were watching in the studio the interview with Andrew Lincoln, and he's like, yeah, this is the part of the comics I've been wanting, really been anxious to get to. It's like
crazy and it's epic
and
it's bloody.
As he
bumbled
towards it for the last 2 years. Yeah.
Right.
And he's right. Like, this chapter of The Walking Dead is very exciting and very intriguing and has a lot of great characters and epic moments. Will we see that on the screen?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's... I've always kind of thought it was a mistake to milk this for so long. Like, you've got great material.
Mm-hmm.
Go for it. Like, do it. Like,
but I'm that budget shit, like, every time you have an episode, like, that's... it's. We made jokes, but I kind of think if we see an epic episode one... I'm going to predict the rest of the season is going to be bland because I feel like they've got to pick their shots.
Right.
They got 2, maybe 3 episodes that they can really make it pop.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got to tell stripped down bullshit story. Not, you know, they don't have to be bullshit. Walking Dead tends to struggle with the quieter character driven moments when the zombie spectacle isn't on the screen, it kind of grinds at a halt,
mm-hmm.
you know? It just seems like a shame because for if $1 million an episode would allow us to have the, you know, the quality commiserate with like Carol kicking ass at Terminus or the first episode, you know, the Stone Quarry zombie gambit, then I would love it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it could really be amazing, but like the attitude just isn't there. I feel to make this show really great. You know, and it's not even just a case of like the money wasn't there. It's more like they've eroded it feels like they've eroded some of the camaraderie between these people to the point where I don't know if you can make a show like when you hear,
I feel
like Vince Gilligan talking about his time with these shows. Like, I never hear the showrunners talking about how great it is to work on the shows. Nicotero does, but he's been there kind of the whole time just doing his zombie thing.
No, I feel like Gimple also is always... I mean, honestly, all the actors
I don't know if I believe Gimple, though.
Oh, well, that's fair enough. But I'm saying they talk a good game. They talk like... And I do, from what I've observed of the actors and actresses, they do tend to really dig working. I mean, it seems like it's a fun set and they're bonded over adversity, and like those 120 degree days has a tendency to kind of weld you together into a family.
Sure.
So I feel like they have a lot of fun and they believe in what they're doing, but I also think that I've seen a lot of the actors when they talk about their characters, they do a lot of headcanon that just not, and you see that a lot in the talking, you know, and the Talking Dead gets on, they're like, well, you know, I always thought that blah blah blah, or maybe you didn't appreciate that blah blah blah. Well, all that blah 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 didn't make it on the screen. So what they're telling themselves and the story they're telling themselves, I sometimes wonder if they sit down and watch the show.
Well, yeah, I mean,
or they just remember how it was filmed and how they interpreted and their own motivations, and that's why it seems better when you hear them talk about the different arcs. And like, wait a second, I remember watching Chad Coleman and Melissa McBride talking about the little crazy girl arc, the look at the flowers arc, and it's kind of amazing. Like, man, if that was actually what was on, got up on the screen, that would have been really cool. But unfortunately, whatever is in Chad Melissa's memory isn't actually what got filmed.
Yeah, it's more about like the episodes when they're being made.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, the actors can bring everything they can to it, but you're still going to have a bad show if you don't have the writing and the direction you need. I don't know what else you want to talk about. There are some spoiler things we can get to.
We do.
We do some music and then
we do
head out to the spoiler section. All right, well, let's cut it off here, and we'll be back next Tuesday or next Monday with the first episode of the new season. Hopefully it'll be a doorbuster, a zombie doorbuster. Really, really kick the hinges off that gate. Come right on in. It's already happened. It's already happened, so we know it's going to be.
Yeah.
I just hope it's good.
Sure.
I hope it's exciting and
for our sake.
All of the right characters die. All of the right characters live.
Yep. All the right bites on all the right faces.
Yep. But we'll see. We'll see. So until next Monday, I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron. See ya. Hey, before we get to the spoiler section, I wanted to take an opportunity to pimp out the club, the Bald Move Club, that you can find all indie information about at club.baldmove.com. Got a lot of cool features coming down the pike. Number one, we got the live watches that we already talked about, where you can watch The Walking Dead with us and kind of sit on the couch and laugh at it and gasp at it and do all the things you can do with The Walking Dead to it. No goats harmed in the making of these live watches. You can also, we got a new feature called Quit Your Pitchin' that we debuted for everyone. You can go to baldmove.com and check it out now. This is where Jim and I randomly generate television show names, and we do hypothetical pitches on these hypothetical shows, and we try to make it fun as bonus feature for our club members only. Again, the first one was free. We also got first-run Bald Movies, which we're excited about. This is where we're picking our shots, and we're taking some anticipated films or films we're personally interested in, and we're doing a light 10-minute-so non-spoiler review up front for everyone, and then we do a spoiler, in-depth spoiler take where we just talk about the movie until we're done talking about it for club members only. This we just did Hail Caesar last week, the new Coen Brothers film. We did The Force Unleashed, no, Force Awakens.
Yep.
Before Christmas, you can check out those for online at baldmove.com. We're doing Deadpool.
That's right.
The probable Marvel dumpuary train wreck. And we try to have that out early Friday afternoon, so you can have our review and kind of be informed. And also, if you see the movie, you can discuss it, hear us discuss it, and join the conversation. All that stuff is club features. It's low priced. It's economic. Ad free feeds and VIP access to the forums. A bunch of other cool features. To say nothing, to lunch with Jim and Aaron, and On the Rocks with Jim and Aaron, and just a whole bunch of just more Jim and Aaron than you can legally consume in a given week. And you can find out how you can get that at club.baldmove.com.
And we're back with the spoiler section. We've got some casting stuff to talk about. Yeah, we've got some Negan stuff to talk about.
So someone in the forum posted that Alicia Witt, last of season 5 Justified infamy, I guess, because season 5 of Justified kind of sucked. She was the pretty hot
bartender.
She was the redhead that was the mother slash cousin of her nephew slash son.
You know, that's everyone in Kentucky. What are you talking about?
Yeah, well, do you remember the Crows from Florida? She was the sister like the med paralegal.
Sister.
Yeah, kind of.
Sure.
She was Paul Atreides' sister.
Practicing
in
Florida law.
Yeah. She's in it. And I don't know who she's going to be. Like, my first thought is she's one of Negan's wives.
One of? Does he have many wives?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
I guess, why not? It's a post-apocalypse.
Yeah. You can, if you know, you can get away with that shit in the apocalypse.
Apparently so, yeah.
Warlords can pretty much do what they want.
Well, if you can have a fucking tiger as a pet, I think, yeah, you can do whatever you want.
She could be, like, I don't know how, if they're going to explore the various other communities, like the kingdom, which was where you'd get the tiger coming in, or the hilltop. I feel like to really tell this story properly, you need at least one other location, because that's the climax, is these, you know, post-apocalyptic communities band together and defeat Negan and his forces instead of, you know, being selfish and just kind of fearful, and, you know, they take a stand for and forge a new society, which is interesting. Right. And so I don't know how they do that
for The Walking Dead. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how they do that without, maybe it's that they change it if it's a single location. I'm playing devil's advocate. It's just a story of Rick molding this ragtag idiot force into an effective, fighting, courageous unit.
Okay. That seems less interesting.
Well, yeah.
But they have to build to it, right?
Yeah, they would have to.
So maybe introduce one of those places.
Yeah.
This half season and then get to the real stuff next season.
So I guess she could be one of the community leaders at one of those other outposts. Or again, you know, there's some sort of meat into some of these Negan's wives' roles and how they interact, you know, because these wives didn't always belong to Negan. And what kind of resentments and hostilities might brew within this guy who just comes over and, you know, takes over.
She's just going to be a zombie extra.
Sure.
Cast me as a...
Why not?
Level two. I don't get the full makeup treatment because I'm not super close to the camera, but...
The other thing, you know, we were talking last season... Negan was cast as Jeffrey Dean Morgan, who played the last I know the comedian on The Watchmen, which we thought that's a great choice.
Yeah, that is.
I'm excited about that. I haven't seen a lot of other casting news.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any other spoilers you want to talk about, or should we get right to the feedback?
I mean, I don't know how much you want to talk about the actual episode itself, but like I was talking about with the action, there's a lot of spoiler action that I know is coming up with Sam. Now it's swapped. It's going to be Sam in this crowd of walkers.
Mm-hmm.
Some shit's going to break bad with all of them, and I'm super excited for that.
Shall we get to the feedback? The spoiler feedback. Edwin C said, "There are two things I found important that I wanted to get your views on. The first is the Enid has taken the role of Sophia from the comics. Now, if you recall, in the show, Sophia died." And was last seen coming out of the barn and getting blasted by Rick in season two.
Yeah.
In the comics, she survives and thrives.
Okay.
But she thinks they're going to take the role of Sophie. This becomes apparent when Glenn is adamant about taking her back and his comments about his wife wanting him to. This is important because in the comics, Maggie is left with the unborn baby and Sophie in the wake of Glenn's murder at the hands of Negan in the comics. And puts a huge burden on her shoulders taking care of two kids during the zombie apocalypse, as well as taking on Negan. Hmm. Is this a hint that Glenn is doomed? Again, I feel like that either Glenn gets beat to death by Negan at the end of this season, or Daryl does.
All right.
Because anything else would feel like a massive cop-out. Hmm. And we know, like, honestly, if he beats Father Gabriel to death,
who cares? Yep.
Rick and Carl cannot be beaten to death.
Right.
Abraham might would be the safest choice. It would still feel satisfying.
Yeah, just because he's kind of a big dude and like
fans like
taking out such a strong player. Sure, is like,
sure, but you'd still you'd still save Norman Reedus,
right?
And you'd still save Steven Yeun.
I feel like there's so much more to do with Michonne that you can't beat her to death.
Nah,
like you gotta Rick and Michonne, right? At some point, you gotta do it.
Well, if not, I mean, Michonne, my interest in Michonne is not just as a love interest for Rick. I think she's a fascinating character.
Sure, yeah.
And she's had a really nice character arc, and she's one of those...
Well, that's why I'm saying, like,
the
further fascination with her is going to be Rick and her getting together, because she has had such a strong arc.
Sure.
But I think it's kind of played itself out, you know?
Mm. But on the other hand, if they do the Kingdom scenario, she actually falls in love with someone...
Oh.
Or if not falls in love with, does the Michonne...
The tiger?
Yeah, exactly. She has a relationship with Sasha. Is it Sasha the tiger? Anyway. again, I have deliberately not reread the comic arc because I do not want this to be fresh in my memory. I think I'm going to go back and see how far we get into the arc and then read it at the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Probably in between, because you can read like... 30 comics in a couple hours. I'll probably do that between the last episode of this season and the wrap up that we traditionally do. But no, I've stayed away, so I'm not super familiar on all the ins and outs are coming up next.
Yeah.
But anyway, we should get back to what Edwin was talking about here. The second thing I want to talk about is a kind of what if with the group walking out at the zombie herd. In the comics, this proves to be disastrous as Ron starts to talk to his mom and attract walkers. It's during this time that Carl is shot through the eye. In the comics, this is done by Douglas, who is the analog to Deanna in the TV series, who is dead and can no longer accomplish this. Unless zombie Deanna comes out with her six-shooter blazing.
I have heard tell that we're going to see a zombie Deanna, but there are some promos that hint at that.
Really? All right.
More than hint at it. They show a zombified creature with Deanna's necklace and wedding ring. So
I hope the Spencer has to take her out.
Yeah.
That'd be something to, you know, stiffen him up a bit.
With a broken bottle of booze. He's got to jab it into her skull.
With only things he looted from the food pantry.
Right.
He kills her with
a can of beans.
Kills her with lasagna noodles. So here's his predictions of the ways this can go down. Number one, the wolf that Morgan let out shoots him on the way out of Alexandria. If this is how it goes down, will Rick blame Carol or Morgan for it? Or possibly both? Two, Deanna isn't dead and comes out of the house like a madman with that gun. This seems unlikely, but I don't put anything past the Walking Dead writers. No fucking way.
She's done. She's
no
dead.
Way.
If she fired all her shots, she's dead.
Yeah. Gabriel freaks out, and when shit goes south and starts shooting, this could happen as he's shown to be kind of a coward. Sure.
Yeah.
Four, a firefight erupts in pursuit of the wolf, and a member of the Alexandria squad does it. My money would be on the wolf, which would cause friction between Rick and Morgan about his views on wife, or on views on life. I think the most likely scenario that I'm kind of surprised Edwin didn't shoot at here is Ron.
Yeah.
Ron, although...
I think Sam's going to cause the commotion.
Carl took his gun from him. Did Carl give it back to him, though, after they had their words?
I don't think so. I'm not sure. He might not have a gun.
But I think he could, if there's some shit that goes down. In the comics, and I'm not sure if he's right here about Ron or Sam, or if they were one and the same in the comics, but, you know, the point is... Jesse's younger son or a young son gets panicked about the zombies and gets frozen up, gets eaten.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesse won't let go of her son. Jesse's holding hands with, because they're kind of like, you know, doing like you do in kindergarten, everybody holding hands while you're walking down the hallway.
Right.
Jesse is frozen in fear. She won't let go of Carl. Rick has to cut Jesse's arm off to save Carl. Then Douglas loses his mind and tries to shoot at Rick, and he ends up shooting at Carl. I think it would be compelling to have Rick cut off Jesse's arm and Ron lose his shit at that, somehow grab a gun, try to kill Rick, and shoot Carl instead.
Yeah.
That seems like the easy Kirkman remix to do and get the same beats out of most of the same parts.
That feels right to me. I think that's how it's going to
What's
go down.
Rick do if Ron kills Carl? Well, not kills, but near mortally wounds and maims Carl. Is that something that could lead to Ron's redemption?
Nah.
Hmm.
I think you got to kill Ron.
It kind of undoes or makes less relevant the interesting work that they've done with Carl and Ron. Like, they've had like almost a Rick and Shane season one, season two struggle.
Right. Yeah.
To take that away from Carl.
Is all this good? This is all going to happen in the middle of a zombie herd?
Dude, I think it's all going to happen in the first episode.
Yeah, yeah, totally. I don't know how Ron starts shooting, and like they're in the middle of the herd, right? Like Ron's gonna start shooting.
I'm not saying it's smart.
Rick and Carl are gonna deal with Ron at the moment. Like, are they gonna run and have to deal with it later? I feel like they'll have to deal with it later, right? You can't deal with Ron in this situation.
Well, I think Carl,
the walkers closing
if
in.
Carl gets his eye blown out, I feel like that's gonna take him down.
Right, and Rick's gonna have to scoop him up.
Rick's gonna have to scoop. Yeah,
get him to
maybe Ron just
Denise,
gets overcome by the herd.
Maybe
he's not a survivor.
Maybe, yeah,
Ron is
might.
Not a survivor.
That's true.
If he would shut the fuck up and listen to Rick and Carl for a couple of weeks,
one.
He could learn to be one.
Yeah.
But right now, he's just a ball of unfocused anger and bullshit and
hormones.
Yeah,
hormones, bullshit.
not a great combination.
No.
Let's move on with the other stuff he wants to talk about. He wants to drop some science for the people that may be ignorant of it about Negan.
Okay.
Everyone by now has heard that he's a maniac who is unpredictable, and that is true. But he is just as, if not more formidable than Rick, which is what makes him so dangerous. This guy has a backup plan for his backup plans and won't be easy to take out. In the comics, Rick gives him many reasons to kill him, but Negan refuses, stating that if he can show these people Rick is his dog to control, they'll all fall in line. He also realizes that Rick is irreplaceable and needed in this world. In an issue, Douglas' son Spencer tries to convince Negan that he is better suited to lead Alexandria when Rick is out, and Negan believes to be on a supply run. Negan laughs at him and states that Spencer is a coward for offering this to him as he's here behind the walls while Rick is out getting shit done, then kills Spencer because of his insubordination.
All right.
The guy's such a great character, and I feel will really lift his show up if the writers don't fuck it up. That's true, because while Negan is unquestionably evil and malevolent, he's kind of got that Wrath of Khan thing going where there is just enough rationality and cunningness that you, I mean, admire is not the right word, but respect.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really curious to see how they deal with his ridiculous use of language. And I know that's a lot coming from me, but this guy just swears like he's breathing. And I don't see AMC being able to do that. And he's kind of already like it's kind of played for laughs in the comics. But how do you play that?
Yeah.
And without it, is Negan too dark that the audience won't properly appreciate him?
I don't know. It's a good question. I'm not even sure they can walk that like evil but respected line. Like, I don't know if I mean, trust them to hit that nuance.
And the governor didn't need that nuance. The governor was just an out and out evil lunatic.
Right.
I mean, he did had a very just the barest, and he had much more of a veneer of civility in the show than he did in the comics.
Yeah, so maybe they can. I don't know.
I don't know either.
We'll find out real soon.
Big test of the Gimple production. Olivia D. This is the big spoiler. This purports to be a synopsis from a reputable spoilers source. Mm-hmm. We shall see. It's actually, I guess the site's called Spoil the Dead is where this came from. So you have a cold open where Sasha, Abe, and Daryl, who she names Team Sad, continue their face off with the group of bikers, which we saw last season on the Stinger, the Into the Badlands Stinger. After Team Sad hands over their weapons, the lead biker orders one of his men to take Daryl to search the truck for booty. Meanwhile, words are exchanged between Sasha, Abe, and the lead biker, as seen in the promo. This results in a biker aiming guns at both Sasha and Abe. In typical Dixon style, Daryl saves him from disaster by subduing the savior he was with, then blowing up the bikers to bits with a rocket launcher.
Yes.
Team Sad hops into trucks and heads home. I do, but like this is why I don't like these synopses. It lacks the detail to make me see how this would be credible, because I now have, Daryl's at gunpoint, and he
just pulls the rocket launcher out.
Grabs the rocket launcher out of its case, loads it, points it, and blows these guys away. Like, there is a way to tell that story without it being stupid, but I don't have faith in The Walking Dead nor details of how I could envision it going down that way.
Right.
It'd be more like cool, I think, if Daryl was just kind of hiding in the truck and they didn't know about it. And you know, he's like listening to them as he's frantically assembling the weapon. And then it'd be kind of cool to have him step around the back of the truck and, you know, you're terminated.
Fire a rocket right between Sasha and Abraham.
Yeah, that's also like, that's not exactly a precision weapon.
Exactly, yeah.
We'll see how that goes. At the Alexander safe zone, Olivia continues. The group continues to make their way through the herd. Rick realizes that there are way too many walkers to drive the walkers away with flares and comes up with a new plan. When the question is raised about what to do, this is where I don't see...
New plan?
Yeah, because we see that they are all holding hands. This is where the believability of this synopsis isn't holding up for me, because they're already out on the street. Mm-hmm. Are they really having this conversation?
Yeah.
When the question is raised what to do with Judith, Father G volunteers to take her to safety. Carl passes her on, and Father G makes his way to the church with Judith. He just walks like in the middle of this zombie thing, they just do this.
So like, I'm curious, because this could be a really interestingly shot scene where all of this is communicated without words, right?
Sure.
Just looks and acting.
Or they get to a safe spot where they can take a break, you know, and they realize there's just way too many zombies to get through.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there's a lot, again.
But I think it's a terrible idea to give Judith to Gabriel. Why would he do that?
Yeah.
Why would he give away his child to Gabriel?
Rick and him hate, I mean, Rick hates him at this point.
Pretty much, yeah.
There's been no development in which Rick would trust him. Now,
Carl reaches out to hand Judith. You slap that hand and you take Judith away.
I can almost see Carl doing this because Carl is starting to warm up to Father Gabriel. But Rick is not there.
No, I don't think he'd let that happen.
All right.
But who knows? It's The Walking Dead. And if they need something to happen, they'll make it happen.
Glenn and Enid team up to save Maggie, but not without some teenage snark from Enid, which is whatever.
All right.
Rick, Michonne, Carl, Jesse, Sam, and Ron lock hands, begin walking through the herd again. Sam becomes frozen in fear and stops. Jesse's pleas become more desperate as Sam cries that he can't do it. A few walkers notice Sam and inevitably sink their teeth into him.
Ugh.
As Sam dies screaming, Jesse becomes paralyzed. A watcher latches onto Jesse's shoulder and she doesn't react. Suddenly she is swarmed and yet continues to tightly grasp onto Carl's hand.
Mm.
Carl's desperation shows as he tries to free himself. Oh, it looks like I'm a genius. But looks to Rick for help. Having no other choice with the walkers creeping on Carl and seeing Jesse as a goner, Rick hacks off Jesse's hand with his trusty red axe.
See, this all feels right to me.
Yes. Ron picks up Jesse's gun off the ground and aims it at Rick. Carl jumps toward him as the gun goes off, which then hits Carl. As Ron goes to shoot Rick again, Michonne drives her katana through his chest. Oh.
Okay, all right.
Killing him.
Nice.
Rick turns and sees Carl standing with blood spewing from his eye. Carl softly saying, "Dad," Carl then collapses to the ground.
Is that in Michonne's character?
Yeah.
To just go this dude murder shot, Ron?
Are you kidding?
So, I know, but...
Carl's number one fan is Rick. His number two fan is Michonne. Like, they've had a real bond. And I can just see, like, just Michonne is still just feral enough to be like, fuck.
You think so?
Yeah.
Okay.
Ron and Carl are both...
She's been the voice of reason lately.
Ron, Carl, and Enid are both man and women enough in this world to take responsibilities for their actions on that kind of scale.
Okay.
So, like, Enid whips out a gun, kills somebody. I don't see anyone having a problem killing her. These are not children.
Yeah, I'm not approaching it from, like, the child angle. I don't know. Yeah.
I don't know if that's interesting, though. It's more interesting than to have a child murderer. And that's what I've always argued is there's a really excellent arc where Carl has to take justice into his hand where the adults won't and murder a child and give him the death penalty.
Right.
I think it'd be a great way for this to go down with Carl is for Carl to, while the adults are arguing what to do with Ron, Carl goes in there and shoots him. Now, this having said that, that fucks up what they did with him and Ron and their arc last season, but that's something The Walking Dead does. So,
yeah, they tend to go that way where, like, people who might be redeemed can't, and they almost get everybody killed. And
Chandler Riggs is already almost too old for this to be an effective plot line.
Yeah, like the whole, like, tension of kids
murdering
and, like,
kids. And
oh, that part of
it. Yeah, I wasn't even thinking about him being strong enough to rip himself away from Jesse.
Right. Like, when he's 8 years old, 9 years old, sure. She can hang on to him when he's 14.
How old do you think? I feel like that Carl's about 14.
Yeah.
I feel like a grown woman has the hand strength to keep a hold of a 14-year-old, especially this isn't like captain of the junior varsity football
team. It's not Abraham at 14.
No.
Yeah.
You know, Carl's a kind of a willowy dude. So I would buy that she could, especially with, like, frantic mother grip.
Right. And being bitten in the shoulders death grip. Like,
yeah. Having all that adrenaline and flowing, pumping through her system that she could clamp down with the force of 10 women.
Okay. I could see that.
Okay.
It's not too much of a stretch.
But I don't see, like, that all sounds great, but how Father G gets dismissed with Judith and heads to the church,
What about the walkers? What about the walkers?
What
there
about
are going to be walkers fucking everywhere during this, right?
Well, but the walkers, I mean, they are still wearing their camouflage.
Yeah, but now they're screaming and shooting and...
But if it's confined to, like, you know, if all the rest of the group gets their game faces on,
right,
and it's Jesse, and they got a lot of fresh meat on the ground, too.
They do, yeah. That's true. Maybe they all swarm Jesse and Sam and...
And Ron, who gets stabbed.
Carl gets shot in the face. I don't know how he could not scream.
Yeah, and what's, you know, if he's going to be down, his dad's got to pick him up and carry him.
It'll be interesting to see how they shoot this.
Moving on, and if this is actually a synopsis as it purports to be. Moving on, Carol shoots and kills the wolf, which, okay.
Oh, what?
That's not a synopsis.
That's anticlimactic.
Plus, like, how? How?
Right. Okay. There's got to be some stuff leading up to that.
The wolf got away clean, man.
Yeah. Yeah, it did.
Yeah, that's like this is like a Jesus wept. Like, this way... way too short of a synopsis for me to judge on what's going to happen. That Denise makes it back to the infirmary somehow in time for Rick to come running into the bleeding Carl.
Right.
No longer afraid, Denise immediately starts working on him after helplessly watching Carl. Rick's rage is activated and he takes his axe and goes ham on a herd of walkers in a safe zone. Other Alexandrians in awe and now inspired join in on the fight. Together they fight the herd because it's the only way they can win.
What? They fight off this entire herd? There are thousands
of them.
Thousands!
I know. And these are Alexandrians who they've taught us are incompetent outside of maybe Heath.
And they've had like a week of gun training, not even. Like an afternoon with Rosita. Didn't they? Yeah.
They had machete training. I don't think gun training was part of it.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. So they all go hacking?
I don't know.
I can't see a scenario in which they fight back this herd.
I mean, I think the best case scenario is the herd passes on through, like they somehow hunker down in a safe area, and let the zombies thin out.
I'm a little bit of a skeptic on the fighting the herd part of it.
Sorry. I'm a little skeptic. I feel like the good halves of these scripts comes essentially right from the comics with smart substitutions on, you know, again, like reading. Edwin's email, I thought the logical person to do shooting is Ron, and especially since Deanna/Douglas is dead and that's not their character arc anyway. All the stuff that this thing rings true seems like it comes right from the comic book, and the stuff that seems very sketchy, hand wavy is the new material that they'd have to invent. So
right.
I mean I hear that this spoiling dead is pretty solid source, but you'll have to see.
Okay.
We'll have to see come Sunday.
I'm still excited. I think it's going to be action-packed, and it's hard to fuck that up too bad.
Yep.
We'll see how it goes.
We won't have to wait long. It's coming this Sunday. We'll have the live watch, of course, starting on, during the East Coast presentation of The Walking Dead.
It's going to be Valentine's Day. You watching, doing a live watch over here?
You don't do anything for Valentine's Day?
No dinner? No.
Nah, her birthday is early in February, so we kind of like go all out and do dinner and kind of gifts for that. And neither one of us are a big fan of Valentine's Day, so.
Ah, poo-poo the traditions.
What better way to celebrate Valentine's Day than...
watch some people get eaten.
With her solid refusal to watch The Walking Dead at this point.
Can't blame her too much.
No, she's one in the camp that she just listens to podcasts now.
Oh, I've never understood
She's
that.
One of those
types,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Teach their own. All right. I think that's it until Monday then.
Yeah. If you got feedback, as always, send it in watchingdead@baldmove.com. We always have the forum threads that you can participate in as well on forums.baldmove.com. And look forward to it. See you Sunday.